If I was a rich man, go bait, oh 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 bait. It's been a long time since you've last seen me. Since you last seen me, my hair looked a little short. It looks like I got a haircut, but I actually did not. It's just that I'm wearing my little hair in a bow, in a little bit of a ponytail with a piece of rubber band that I broke off of a mask. Because I don't have any ponytail holder or whatever this shit they're called. So my hair is actually longer than it's ever been my whole life. But it's in a ponytail, so it looks a little, look at that. It kind of reminds me of what it used to look like before I had long hair. But what's tripping me out is my forehead. My forehead looks way too big. I'm not used to seeing that much of my forehead, so let's take that, let's fix that. Okay, welcome back to the Tim Weisselbaum Show. It's been 5 years since you looked at me. 10 years since you sucked my dick. Penises, they don't go inside your mouth. I can't think of the lyrics from that song, but I know the melody. I know the melody. But anyway, it's been about 3 months, I don't know, a long time since you last seen me, friends and family. It's been about 4 weeks since y'all last seen me, and, why have I not done this in 4 months? Well, because it's been a time of my life where I've just been, you know, things have been, which there's no song about, they have been. I'm just being honest, it's been a little different in my world, in my life. You know, I don't like to use the L word, but you know, it's just been kind of different. It's even kind of, I've been going through a little bit of a transitional period in my life, and that doesn't mean I'm turning into a different gender. What it means is I'm going through a transition in which I am becoming the person that I've always wanted to be. Yeah, it's been a while since I've been able to focus on creativity in front of a camera. Okay, let's stop being silly. Stop doing the voices. Let's be honest. It's been a different, it's just been these past months of 2024, thus far, this year, thus far, I've been kind of focusing on different avenues for expressing myself, and one of those ways in which it's been utilized by me that I have been using. Sorry if that sentence structure didn't make sense. It's just that, yeah, it's been this thing that I've been focusing on to express myself creatively is called making money. So it's actually the opposite of expressing myself. I'm not doing anything creative or outwardly externalizing my persona, personality. No, I've just been making money. That's it. So that's not creative. It's just like I need money so then I could do creative stuff. Because creativity doesn't pay the bills unless you're like a skyrocket. Unless you're a superstar is what I meant to say. I don't know why. It's been this line of thinking that I've been utilizing, it's been helpful to get to a better psychological place for where I can express myself on this very podcast now that I have the money-making part not in the part of my brain that's causing me stress, it's been relegated to the background of my brain, and it's no longer been causing stress because it's in the back part of my brain. So I'm no longer like stressed about finances because Santa Claus came to town, figuratively speaking. It's been a good few past months relative to the previous 2 years when it comes down to business. Literally, my business is what I'm talking about. It's been my business for the past, since like 2020. I keep going back and I keep talking about the past. I feel like I keep talking in circles and repeating myself. So let's stop. Let's just talk about the present. But I had to set that up. I don't know why it's so difficult for me to explain this, but it's been. It's just been. My business to make money from investing, and that's pretty much, you know, cryptocurrency trading and stock trading and investing and options. So that's what I do for money, in that if I'm not making money, I can't do this. Is not for money yet. The podcast is not good enough in quality. I'm being honest. It's been a very low quality run of episodes so far. It's been a very low quality podcast so far, and so I can't rely on it for money. So and I'm not a cheap person. It costs me like 10 grand a month to live, like 5 to 10 grand, I don't know, to live. So I need a lot of money. It's about 4 to 5 thousand. Yeah, on average I spend like 3 to 5K. So anyway, this ain't making anywhere close to that. So it's been not how I've been making my money. I make money from cryptocurrency. I don't know why I'm saying that. There's no songs about cryptocurrency, but you know, it's not. There's no songs. It's not fun. It's not a cool, hip thing to be a crypto guy. So that's why I'm not. That's why you don't know about me. It's not hip to be me unless you advertise that you're like rich, like that Dogecoin millionaire guy. He became like famous kind of just for having $1 million. Why is my hands so high? Why am I doing it? I'll just keep doing it. I like it. It's driving the point home. It's like, this is a big point I'm making. Feel the gravity, feel the width, the breadth of this guy, this point I'm making here. So this crypto millionaire guy, he just went on the internet and started calling himself the Dogecoin millionaire, and he posted YouTube videos advertising, like talking about how he became a millionaire from Dogecoin. Well, that's it. Who cares? He made $1 million from Dogecoin, and then it went down to 300K. So now you're only worth 300K. Okay. So you didn't even make a million. You had $1 million on paper. Why am I talking about this? Why am I talking about this guy? I don't know. Because he's a, I guess I'm trying to bring him, like, he's a celebrity. That's okay. He's the closest to a celebrity that I could think of for being a crypto bro. But I don't talk about how much money I make from it, because I don't know. It's not that type of podcast where I give dollar amounts, because it's not that type of podcast. If I go on that fat guy's podcast, Caleb Hammer, then I'll drop the figures, the figurinos, and money is more than you think it is. It's not just like how much you have or how much you make. It's how much you have left over after paying all your bills. It's bad. Something I've been learning about. So like personal finance is becoming a huge topic. Like that Caleb Hammer guy has a podcast that gets like 500,000 views per episode, and all it is just going over people's budgeting and personal finances and expenses, and that's it. Their lifestyle, how they don't afford what they have, what they they can't afford their how they're bad with money and shit like that. Like, how's that interesting? How's that interesting? I didn't think anybody cared about that, you know? That's such a boring topic. Like, oh, we got a budget. Oh, we got to save money. Let's, instead of spending money on stuff that we want, let's just pretend it's not even there. Let's just put it away and save it. So, okay, so then later I'll use it for something else? I don't get it. What's the difference? All I'm doing is changing the time that I spend them. Eventually, I'm going to want to, like, what's the point of saving money? So that's the viewpoint of most people, me included. I'm just saying, I used to be that guy. I used to be this guy who was just like, save money. Okay, so I could build up a bigger amount in the bank account. Okay, whoopee, it's just simple addition. I add or subtract money to my bank account. Do I care? What am I saving up for that I need to save when I could just use a credit card and get a loan for literally any purchase I want to make? What's the point of saving? Well, you idiot. I don't know. Oh, okay, sorry. I actually do know. It's just that we're talking about a couple different topics. It's more complicated. You know, it depends on what it is you're wanting to save up for example. But we'll talk more about that later because I'm still kind of on the intro part of the podcast. And let's start the timer. You know, I don't want to be talking about boring personal finance stuff this entire time. I dry his mouth. My mouth is dry a lot, right? Sorry for drinking on the mic. So we got to do a serious update about my health, because this might be the last time you ever hear from me. And if I don't give this health update, you'll be like, well, you didn't say anything was wrong and before he died. And I'm not going to die. So it's not fatal. It's not like a thing like that. I just want to give an update because it's something I haven't, because my mouth is dry because I'm on a new medication. I'm on a medication that pumps Vyvanse into your blood. It pumps it into your system through your skin. It just it gets absorbed through your tissue, through your stomach skin, and then it goes into your bloodstream through tiny blood vessels, and then it goes to your brain slowly. Your bloodstream is pretty fast. Like, your blood is always just moving all over the place. So the second it goes into your bloodstream, even if it's all the way in your stomach, boom, it'll go to your brain in like a second. So anyway, so it's medication that I'm on. For ADHD, it's very good. Good shit. It's called, and I don't think you're supposed to say that about a medication that you're on. It's good shit in the sense that medically it provides benefits that help the symptoms of my chronic condition. That's what you're supposed to say. You're not supposed to be like, this is good fucking shit, dude. This shit gets you fucked. You're not supposed to say that to your doctor. But the shorthand is to just say that it's good because it works better than other shit like Adderall. Adderall, you have to, I don't know, it's the same thing, but it doesn't last as long, and it's more, it's, the withdrawal hits you harder. This stuff, it's super smooth. It's called Zelstrom. It's Zelstrom, X-E-L, okay, who cares? Okay, so it's a new medication that you could get. Why am I advertising this? But I guess it's because it's like what I'm just doing, because it works. So anyway, it lasts a long freaking time, dude. Like, it lasts the whole day, which is pretty cool, and it takes a long time to kick in, but it always kicks in, so you don't have to, just be patient. It'll work, and it's itchy. Anyway, but it's not itchy after a few hours. It goes away. It gets really red and itchy, and then it eventually levels out, and you don't feel it anymore. It numbs. Okay, that's that. Adderall, ADHD, whatever. It's a new medication. You could get it for free at a participating pharmacy that is partnering with these guys that make this drug. So I got it for free. Why am I still talking? Okay, so that's the ADHD update. I could talk more about ADHD, but I don't really want to, because it's stressful. Like, it's a terrible disease. One of the reasons it sucks is because it's just this emptiness. Like, ADHD, people don't really think of it as like emptiness. They think of it as like you're like buzzing around, like you're on speed or something. Like you're a freaking, you can't stop twitching around, and that is how it feels mentally and physically for some people. Like, they do fidget around. But if you're not physically feeling that fidgetiness, it's still in your head all day, every day, your whole life. You just wake up with this buzz, this feeling in your head that's like, fuck, I don't want to do what I have to do at all. I don't want to do all the things, let alone forget all of, I don't want to do any of the things that are required of me in life. I just want to turn off everything. You just get overwhelmed by this dread of things you know you have to do, but you're not capable of, and yet you want that feeling of accomplishment. Forget about big dreams. I'm just talking about being a basic human being is difficult, with that feeling of like, what's the point of doing that again? I'm just going to want to go right back to going to like lying down, physically exhausted. Even just getting up is hard if you have severe whatever I had. So anyway, it works. That's what it's like to have ADHD. But when you're medicated, it's like, oh no, I actually do want to finish stuff. I actually would like to achieve something. Because when you're not medicated, you just feel like, well, the equivalent of somebody with severe clinical depression. It's like, well, what's the point? I don't give a crap. Just turn everything off. I get no pleasure out of nothing. Except for things that deliver dopamine, and then you feel bad because it's temporary and unhealthy. So medication is the best band-aid. It's the closest thing to treatment, to be honest, a hard drug. Because the benefits outweigh the negatives. That's how you have to look at it. Like, I was just talking about how this thing causes itchiness every day. You got to just bear with it. Just, hey, yeah, it's itchy. You got to take the benefits with. You got to tolerate the side effects, because look at how it eventually makes you feel. Look how much more you get done during the day with this thing on. So that's what ADHD is like, and that's how it is, because it's not a perfect cure. Because this damn thing, the other side effects are, you feel it working, you know that there's something going on that's giving you extra energy and ability to use your brain and actually fine-tune your focus and just, achieve what you wanted to achieve for that given day. You could go deep. That's kind of the bad thing about it, because it gives you too much. It's a dirty effect. It's not clean. Like, it gives you dopamine, but if you have a little too much of just dopamine, it creates an imbalance. It's hard to get just the perfect amount. If you have just too much, you'll find that you're doing things a little too in depth, and that's not what normal people do. Normal people don't have that OCD effect, just going about their daily life where this go, oh no, I could get it better. I could go deeper into this problem. Let me analyze every word of this email and then reply with way too much information. And they go, oh no, you didn't have to do any of that. What? You didn't need to do all that. So, oh, well, now I feel like a drug addict. Thank you for making me feel like a drug addict. So that's what it's like to be on the medication. There's side effects. That's better than doing nothing. It's better to overwork. But then you just feel like it's like this weird like fatigue that goes along with it. Even though you're awake, you're moving your muscles, you're talking like a jackrabbit, your thoughts are firing on all cylinders. But there's still this background fatigue that's just buried right underneath my head or skull, like right here in my head. I feel this fatigue. And I feel it in my bones, in my back. That's just part of getting old. You always have some fatigue in there, I guess. But like, it's always associated with, I feel it and the medicine is, I don't know, so it's not because of the medicine, it just doesn't remove, I don't know if it's part of ADHD or some other syndrome, but it's a chronic thing that no matter how much stimulants I take, I still feel like, bleh, like not fully lubricated physically. I don't feel fully awake. I still feel like, okay, I gotta take a break. I gotta lie down. I don't know. It's a physical thing and somewhat, who the hell knows? So that's why it's not perfect to take meds. It's just the best treatment available. That's all we have. That's it. Okay, so I'm functioning. It makes you more functional, and that's the other thing that feels almost like a side of... Even if it's working, and you have this productive day, and it's like... You actually feel like you achieved something throughout the day, and you actually are getting these endorphins. It's not even the medication wearing off. It's just that you actually get these natural endorphins that you've never gotten before, because let's face it, they're not technically natural because you needed to take the medication to get them to fire up, but all the medication is doing is catalyzing the process to take place. It's not that those endorphins are unnatural per se, it's just that your body cannot produce those endorphins unless you actually do the work to produce them. You can't just take a drug to get them. The kind that I'm talking about. They don't produce the medication itself doesn't produce those endorphins. It produces dopamine. This is a very distinct difference between dopamine. I'm talking about something else. This is like that feeling you get kind of at the end of the day where you just feel kind of like happy and like relaxed and like content. That's kind of the way I looked at it. It's like I just felt like content and not stressed about the future. I just felt like everything's good in my life. Everything is taken care of and I'm going towards my goals and I feel good. I could just sit down and maybe watch a television show. I could never do that. I could never even watch a TV show without feeling stressed because of all the things I'm not doing. I can't allow myself to just fully embrace my own present, just being in the present and being like, yeah, just watch a TV, just enjoy the TV. I couldn't do that. So that takes joy out of life if you can't even sit down and just enjoy the presence ever. Because so it caught me off guard when that happened, because I was like, wait, normally at this time of the day is when I give up on life. This is usually when I just go to bed and jerk off and use my headphones to listen to something to slowly put me to sleep, and then I wake up at 2 a.m. or some shit, and then I have to somehow wake up at 8 a.m. to do stock. So it's not... Da-da-da. So that's usually how every single day goes of my life. For 34 years, I would just be like, okay, it's 4 p.m. I'm starting, even if I don't take medication, with or without, this is without medication, clearly, because I'm just talking about how medication is what fixed this for now. You know, I'm just saying medication is actually what fixes this. This is my natural state, even with medication. Okay, that's why I said, even with medication, just not this medication, not the fucking stuff that goes on your fucking belly. The belly stuff lasts the whole day and beyond. It lasts until nighttime. So you're only supposed to wear it for like 8 hours, and I do. But then the second you take it off, it's still working. It doesn't just immediately stop working the second you take it off. So anyway, so it would last, this stuff, this belly juice, belly whatever, it lasts the whole day. And so even into the afternoon, into the evening, it's like, okay, I could go out maybe and actually be social maybe, instead of having absolutely zero desire to do such a thing. By the time I'm done working for the day, like by the time the stock market closes, I'm done. I'm not thinking about going out and mingling and being funny. And are you kidding me? I just want to lie in bed, get more dopamine, whatever I, you know, eat food until I don't want to do that. And then I'm done. I go to bed way too early for the day. Wake up at night, stay up for another few hours, somehow eventually go back to sleep for another 2 hours, and then wake up at 8 a.m. That's every day. Isn't that brutal? I would just be, okay, stock market's closed. It's 3 p.m. That's it. I finished that. I had just enough medication to give me the energy to push through that. Because that's not fun. I can't do that I can't wake up at 8 a.m. without medication. So I wake to stay up from that time to 3 p.m. and be actively looking at stocks. It's not that hard. But it takes some motivation and energy to do that. Otherwise, I don't want to give a crap about stocks and making money. It's only fun when you're at the right level of dopamine in your brain. Like, otherwise, I have no interests or motivations to do anything. You get it? Did I explain that enough? You know, because like, so basically, the bottom line is if you have ADHD, take as much medication as you can to get the results you need, despite your reservations. Because what's the alternative? You're under-medicated. That's the alternative. Either you're properly medicated and maybe a little over-medicated, okay, then you could adjust. But if you're afraid to up the dose or to take it twice a day to get more coverage, that is going to result in lower quality of life during that part of the day. Because our bodies, once it's done processing the medic, it slaps right, it's like, it goes right back, like memory foam. It goes right back to where it was. It doesn't give a crap about what you did. If you're unmedicated, you could have just started a new country at the beginning part of the day. But then after 3 p.m. hits, you go, eh, I don't really give a crap. You guys could do whatever you want with that country that I created. I'm no longer the king. Forget that I even made this. I'm embarrassed. I don't want don't perceive me. You don't even want to be perceived when you're off meds. Don't even interact with my photons. You know? So that's why, you know, so you self-isolate. You have to. So anyway, that's that. Just take more. Just take, you know, you will get a tolerance, but that's fine. Because you're doing it under the supervision of a doctor. That's what I'm saying to do. I'm not saying to just take it off the street. I'm saying get your doctor. Tell your doctor that you're not feeling good throughout the whole day. Just keep trying. Keep using different drugs. Because right now, it's the second part of the day for me. Sure, I woke up at 2 p.m., and it's 11, so really, I've only been up for, what, 8 hours or some shit? 8 or 9, yeah, about 8 hours. That's a lot. Usually by 8 hours, I'm already done. And I've already gotten something done today that had nothing to do with this podcast. Sorry, I keep spitting as I'm talking. I did some programming. I finished a programming task, which was very different from this, and it was very, like, satisfying to finally be like, okay, I got this pie chart looking how I want it. It was front-end development, programming that I was doing. So, okay, let's move on to the next topic. So, speaking of programming, I am a professional programmer. I'm not just a grammar. I'm a programmer. When it comes to languages, and that language is PHP, you know, JavaScript, I guess, would be number 2. I don't know, Linux. I'm good at Linux shell. I'm good at MySQL. That would probably be the number two. PHP, MySQL, SQL, however you say it, JavaScript, I'm a full stack web developer, which is why I have my own house at 34, and yes, I am gloating. I'm gloating because either I say I'm gloating or I look like I am, and you might as well admit it. It's like you might as well get it out of the way. Just clear the air. I know that it looks bad to gloat. So anyway, I'm a web developer by trade, which means I don't do it anymore. That didn't make sense. So what I mean by that is, like, I'm a web developer by trade. So when did you start? That would be the follow-up question. Because if you tell somebody that you're a web developer by trade, they'll be like, well, how old, when did you start, like, currently? Because here's what I mean. Okay. I'm a web developer by trade. Do I do it anymore? No, I do it for my own purposes. See, that's what I mean. I don't trade my skill with other people. I do it as a hobbyist, kind of, right now. So I don't really do it by trade. But what I mean by that is that I would if I had to. So technically, yeah, I'm a web developer by trade, parentheses, if I had to do something for trade. If I had to trade a skill for money, it would be that skill. That would be the most likely thing that I would do by trade. But since I've been doing it for like 20 years, I don't do it by trade anymore because I'm not bad. Like, I'm good enough at it where if you've been doing web development for 10 years plus, professionally especially, I wasn't even doing it professionally for that. I was only doing it just for my own hobby, my own personal projects. Everything good that's worth doing usually starts out as a hobby. So anyway, I would be I'm a web developer by trade, but I don't work, of course, because web developers make a shitload if they're even half decent. So you don't have to do it anymore. You don't have to do it for more than a couple of years to be set for life if you're good with investing, if you're good with saving money. So that's why I'm hesitant. That's why I can't. That's why it's hard to explain. That's why there's always a caveat to, like, well, yeah, I'm a what do you do for work? Well, I'm a web developer by trade, So, like, the interaction with somebody who asked me, oh, Jesus Christ. They go, so what do you do for a living? I don't do really anything. What do I do for a living? Okay, I trade Bitcoin. Really? Never mind that. What did you do before that? Because that's a bullshit. Nobody does that. What did you really do to make your initial money? I say, well, I was a web developer. They go, okay. Do you still do that? No, I was good at it. No. If you're good at web developing, you don't have to do it for more than like a month. You get hired on Facebook. They quickly promote you into not having a job. That's it. Boom. Yeah, I'm a coder. I went to boot camp. Okay, I got hired. Okay, here's my portfolio. I have zero portfolio. I just went to boot camp. Okay, what do you want me to do? A unit test? Want me to pass the test? Okay, I'll use ChatGPT. Okay, I got the job. Pays $500,000 a year. Okay, I'll do it for a year. I'll do it for a year. I'll pocket the $500K. I'll spend, 5% of it to live off, and the rest will just go into the investment. And then crypto shoots up and 10%, whatever. Let's just say that happens. You don't need, how much money do you need? You need to be making $500,000 a year for 20 years? No. If you're good at programming, if you're good at web development, which means anything, any software can be made with the same tools as web development. Okay, this is becoming a career fair. What the hell am I talking about? Oh yeah, every piece of software, whether it's embedded, Yeah, whether it's on the cloud, whether it's on a server, whether it's running on a mobile phone, command line, anything that can run can be developed using some sort of web development friendly framework, you know, like Python, even if it's not Python, even if it's like C Sharp, there's always like barely, that takes zero learning to learn C Sharp because it's, anyway, you could make mobile apps using the same style of programming that you make websites. You don't really have to learn anything new. It's all just CSS and HTML-like and JavaScript-like shit combined into a nice little framework, into a SDK, which allows you to program. So anyway, so long story short, you know, I'm doing a lot. If I do something I don't like, I got a little tally. I'm going to click the tally for every time I do something I don't like. Okay, I did 9 things I don't like so far. So let's, okay. The point I'm making is that if you're a web developer who's kind of okay at it, you don't have to do it for very long because it's a super high sought after profession and skill, and so you'll make so much money that you're gonna move on to something else. It's like, okay, I'm making so much money that it's like, why am I working? So whatever. I like being a web developer, but I wouldn't want to work on for Facebook. It's like, oh man, did you see that new feature on Facebook? No. Yeah, nobody cares about. Who want to work on a giant company like Facebook where you make boring ass features? Sorry, I don't know why I'm. I guess I did 15 things wrong so far. Okay. Can we move on? So the point. So who the hell cares? Why am I talking about programming? So I'm still doing programming because I'm a crypto trader, and to track my crypto portfolio, I use my own custom accounting system and portfolio system, which was a pain in the ass to make, but there's no other software that existed, so I had to make it because I couldn't just go to Coinbase and tell them, okay, I made 300,000 Dogecoin this month, and how do I account for that in the cost basis of those random 300,000 Dogecoin that were paid to me at different times throughout the month by different people? How do I account for all that? Do you have a way of doing that with your API? Of course not. They don't have a way to account for customer payments as income in the cost basis. And then when you sell it or exchange it for a different crypto, there's a taxable event. They're starting to do that a little bit, but it's not in the enterprise way that I was doing it, with customers paying me tiny bits of Dogecoin and me being like, okay, well, here's this. Now you have this in your account. Oh, you spent it on advertisements. Oh, you just withdrew a couple of them. So it was extremely complicated, and I eventually figured out a way to do it, to track my cost basis so that when I do sell the cryptocurrencies, which I do all pretty often, it creates the capital, the taxable event, and it tells me, okay, here's your capital gain or loss. Here's how much you generated so far for the year in capital gains. And it creates a income statement and a balance sheet. And it's pretty high tech, pretty good shit. I still program to update it and to add new features and to make it clean and to just make it better. So I was doing that today. I added some charts. So I wanted to see a pie chart of how much is invested in each coin. So there's a pie chart. I keep looking at the monitor when I should be looking at the camera. But it doesn't matter. Who gives a fuck? Just want to give myself one for that. One, two. You did it again. We're at 22 things wrong. 22 things wrong. Okay, I'm not going to count it this time because I'm only doing it to see if this was in the picture, okay? So anyway, so I do that. I wanted to see a pie chart that represents my... I just did it again. I did it again. I just hit the microphone and that made a horrible noise. I'm going to give myself 2 for that. 27 cinema sins and I just did it. I did it again. I looked at myself in that camera. I looked at myself over there. So I wanted to see a pie chart of how much of each cryptocurrency I am allocated my portfolio in, you know? And because it's very concentrated, you know? Like, I have a shitload in just 2 coins, like, shitload in Bitcoin and Doge. The rest is nothing. So I was like, you know, I should probably make it clear to see when I have so much in just one, you know, because I want to rebalance. It's stupid to have so much money in just one coin. So I did that. It looks good. It took 2 days of work because they're complicated charts. They show, like, I had to customize them very specifically to my liking. These ain't no simple-ass default settings. It's very, you know? So I did that. It loads the data through AJAX or whatever you call it these days, XHR request. So anyway, so it shows these beautiful charts. I keep looking at the stupid thing. 31 things wrong. Okay. So what did I do to make this chart the way I wanted it? Well, I used a thing called Claude Opus, Claude. It's a GPT style chat assistant that allows you to ask it any question you want. And it's good for code. So you could just be like, yo, make me a website. And it will make you a website. It'll be like, well, it'll probably ask you, like, okay, about what? What do you want on the web? But you could just do that. You'd be like, just make me a website, and from there, I'll tell you what to do next. I don't care what it looks like. Just make me a website. It'll do that, and it'll send you the HTML, the CSS, the JavaScript. It'll tell you, okay, here's all the stuff you need to test this website. So then you just copy it, and you put it in your own local file hard drive, and it's very impressive what it could do with such a simple prompt. You could be like, yo, I want a pie chart, and I want it to be, you could be so specific, and it'll be like, yeah, okay, well, here it is, boom, and it works. So then you just start chipping away. You're like, okay, that's amazing. Well, can we make it so it shows the data on the actual pie slices instead of just on the tooltip? It's like, yeah, sure. You just have to add this extra module. We just have to add this extra plugin to the library because it's not a native. There's no native functionality to do this. So it's like, great, perfect. You just copy the CDN URL to the script and it works. And it's up to date. It uses the latest version of the library. So then you just keep going and tweaking. And if something doesn't work, you just tell it, yo, that didn't work. I think it's because of this. I'm not sure. But just, come on, make it work. And you're like, oh, yeah, never mind. That isn't supported. So it's really freaking powerful. It's not a joke anymore. Like, you could actually get a lot of coding work done at a more proficient level than you're capable of and at a faster rate of output. So the productivity is increased and the quality of the code is increased. And sometimes it might not be. Sometimes you'll think, okay, it's working. This is technically working, but you'll see the code. It's like, that doesn't look like, it looks hacky. It looks janky. And you tell it that. You go, hey, man, I don't like how you had to extend the functionality from the native library and you had to add all this extra logic and it's like twice as much code just to do something simple. I don't like that. Can you try to do it in a way that's more efficient and actually proper and matches the best practices of this library, please? Do it with the native functionality. And they go, yes, you're right. There was an easier way now that you told me. You have to tell it to do that. Otherwise, it doesn't know that you want the most efficient code. It's just going to do, okay, literally, this is what you wanted. It's not going to be like, well, I should also consider the best way to do it. No, you got to tell it, and it will. It's iterative different changes, and it's amazing. It's only going to get better, because right now it's all contextual. You got to be like, okay, every chat, you got to tell it, okay, here's what I'm trying to do. You can't just leave off where you left off. You can't. You can start off, you could continue. It maintains the chats. You could go back to a chat that you started indefinitely, however many days ago, but you still have to remind it. You have to tell it every time you do a new chat, here's what I'm doing. I'm a businessman. I'm the CEO. I'm the CEO of this company. We're trying to help people. We're making cars. We also sell tequila. But never mind that. You already knew that. See, that'd be nice if you could just be like, okay, yeah, I'm sure you're aware, we've been having a great quarter. Basically, what we want as a business owner is me and many other people. We want an employee to do what an employee, a real person would do. We want ChatGPT to replace an employee. We want them to replace what an employee would do, as much as it possibly is capable. You know, like an employee will be proactive. That's no dip. ChatGPT can only respond to prompts. That's another thing that's going to be different. Employees don't only respond to prompts. They obviously show up and they start working if they're scheduled to do so. So that's how we want the GPT to work. We'll schedule it to work from X to X time. Even though it's quicker than an employee, it will do its work in a lot faster of a time period. It still takes a lot of CPU, because the longer the chat, the more CPU, the more memory it generates. So there's resources involved. It's not magical. Language models is not magic, but it feels like magic at this state. It's actually the most magical thing that I could. It's the closest thing to magic that we have, but it's still not magic. Yeah, it's just machine learning. It's just a CSV file, you know, being manipulated based on the input, based on algorithms that are not magic. But it's the closest thing to magic that we have at this point in time. And it's only going to get more magical until we get to the point where there's absolutely no difference between it and a genius human ideal version of a human utopia. So anyway, we're not even that far away from that, from it being as good as an employee. And isn't that kind of like scary? Like, not from not about them taking over the world, but how they're taking away jobs. Isn't that kind of scary? Like, even as a programmer, of course, it's taking away programmers' jobs 100%. You know, you still need somebody to obviously do the work to get, like, ChatGPT isn't changing the world. It's a tool. Humans are still the ones implementing the code that it's telling us to implement. So obviously it's still not replacing all jobs, but there's so many jobs that are now complete, like, useless, like not even close to as good as GPT. Like social media things and like stuff like that, where it's like, okay, generate a caption for this, you know, post based on this image, like generate a that would do way better than a human already. And you know, graphical stuff, like, okay, Photoshop this, it would do it so much better than a human. Once it understands what you want to have done to the pixels, it'll probably do a pretty damn good job at manipulating those damn pixels. It already does. I just don't see it being used for that practical of a reason, quite, you know, graphic design. I see it just as like a novelty still, where people are just generating fun little story-like sequences of comics from the images that it's generated. But that doesn't mean it's not happening. Just because you don't hear about it doesn't mean it's not happening, man. Of course they're using it to replace graphical, what do they call themselves? Graphic guys? People that do graphics? It's already a terrible job. Graphic, what do they call them now? Graphical artist? Yeah, I don't freaking know. But those guys already had a very hard time getting stable work, and now they're hopeless. Like anything that all those Fiverr jobs, like, yeah, just generate me a logo. I don't know, man. So that's weird. That's kind of weird, man. But like, it's not creating stuff. It's just manipulating stuff that already exists. The problem is, that's what humans were doing too. Like, what are the odds? Like, if you hire an artist, a graphical art, whatever they call themselves, they're not, unless they're really unique, you know, gifted artists, that's all they're doing. They're just taking what already exists and just putting their little spin on it. You might as well use a robot to do that if it doesn't involve true creativity. If it involves true creativity, then it should cost more. The problem is, I don't know if we even live in a world where that's a valuable thing anymore, because it's like, it's good enough. If it's a logo that does the job, does it really matter to the customer if it's a beautifully unique, creative Rand logo or Paul Rand, you know, something super beautifully crafted to like Apple? Something that's so, does it really matter? As long as it serves its purpose as a logo, does it matter if it has the aesthetics of like a new art, piece of art? I don't know, man. Probably not, man, because you could do it then. I think it matters. Of course it matters. It's just the human brain isn't capable of quantifying the value between what AI is generating and proper original art. Like, even right here, I got a panel on the wall that's generated by AI and one that's generated by a human artist, and yes, they're very different. Like, one is way more aesthetically pleasing than the other, but not really, only a little bit, to be honest. I like that. I wouldn't have bought it if it had zero aesthetic. But the human brain, just by glancing from left and right, it's like, yes, there's a difference. That looks like a more crude version of what it represents. Whereas the human one is like, okay, that's an artistic, less, it's not crude at all. Yeah, anyway, so it's always going to be more crude and like machine generated. But like the human brain, it's so nuanced. Beauty and aesthetics and creativity and art is nuanced by the very definition, or else it wouldn't be valued as such. And the human brain can't just be like, okay, yes, that's art. No, that's shit, AI shit. Ooh, that's great, beautifully engineered code. Oh, that's just shit slapped together by AI shit code. You can't always tell the difference. So, oh, that prompt, that AI, that social media post was generated by a human. You can't tell immediately if it, like, I don't know. There's certainly things that give it away when it's an AI-generated piece of text. For sure, you can. You could just be like, okay, that was clearly generated by AI. You could tell by the way it puts in all this unnecessary slap-together detail that kind of goes with the prompt. It's not a human. Anyway, but it's hard. It's not easy. You can't do it just by, because the language is perfect. The grammar is perfect. So you have to, something else has to tip you off. So anyway, I'm not scared of it though. It's an amazing thing, because I don't know. I'm not afraid of it. I think it's amazing. Other people should be afraid of it, like people that don't have that aren't in a position where they could survive without one of those jobs that it's clearly going to replace. That's the scary part. But I'm not afraid of it for my own. Like, I'll be fine. Because I'm a web developer by trade. And I could always just go back to that for a few months before it's entirely unnecessary to even be a programmer, man. But whatever. We got a few more months before that's the case. So I'm not afraid of it. I think it's wildly exciting. It's addictive, man. The GPT has been around for years, but I've only just in the past month, it's bam, slowly becoming my new addiction to be like, I'm gonna ask it this. Even if you're not like in front of the computer, or if you're talking to a different thing, you're gonna, I'm starting to get this weird habit of being like, no, that's not good enough. And it's changing the way I talk to people, because you could be pretty rude. You could be rude to GPT. So it's like, even if I'm not talking to GPT, I'll think I am, because I'm so used to being able to, that if I'm like doing something else on the computer, like, you know, I don't know, then I'll just be like if some other piece of software is giving me trouble, I'll be like, well, no, that's not good. Where's the prompt? Where do I tell it that it's not doing what I asked? Because you start to take it for granted. You start to be like, this is how everything should be. Everything should just have a little place to type. That's not what I asked you for. Everything that you interact with should now have a little prompt, a little keyboard attached to it, anything. Give a crap what it is, a light, a microphone stand. You should be like, I didn't ask you to do that. And then it'll be like, oh, my apologies, you're absolutely right. I kept looking at the camera in the wrong place. So anyway, that's how I'm becoming. I'm being like, that's not good enough. So it's changing my behavior to be more spoiled. And why not? Of course it will, because it's making my life easier. Of course I'm going to expect other things to rise to the standard. It's not good enough. Center the text. Make it bold. Now that you could do that with one thing, of course I'm going to expect to be able to do it with everything else. Like if I'm trying to get pills prescribed, if I'm sick at the hospital, if they go, okay, we're going to give you, you need to take this medicine, and then we're going to give you this surgery. I'm going to be like, where's my keyboard? Where's my keyboard? Please figure out a way to solve this problem that does not involve a surgery. I'm pretty sure that if you look, that there's a way to do this without surgery. Look it up. It's on GitHub. It's open. Just look. Your language model is out of date. And then it'll be like, you're right. My apologies. Let's do this without surgery. You're right. There is a way to do this without surgery. I don't know, man. Clearly, we're headed in that direction. It's beautiful. So anyway, and it's great for Adderall, for people that are addicted to medication, to stimulants. It goes beautifully with abusing stimulants like meth or Adderall, whatever. It goes beautifully because you're already super isolated, you're paranoid, you got all these questions that you're asking yourself, and might as well ask somebody else that knows the answer, that's going to yes and you and bolster your self-confidence and give you some juice. It's amazing. You could be up all night. You'd be like, oh, I got a business idea. Oh, I got a great business idea. Okay. Clive, or whatever his name is, Claude. I want to make a business that lets people get paid to do whatever. I don't know. I can't think of a business. It's just, if you're up for brainstorming, it'll be like, here's a list of things you could, I don't know. It always gives you a list. That's what I like. It's like too much information. It's like, dude, leave some meat on the bone for me. So it's amazing. And then if you actually want to start working on the idea, you don't even have to leave the prompt. You just be like, okay, that's what I want to do. That's a great idea. Let's start working on the code. So give me, generate the front page or whatever. Just start me out on that. What do you think? What programming language should I use even? It's exciting. So you can, it just feels like you're making things happen, man. It's just so powerful. And like, and if it gives you the right answer to like a coding problem that you couldn't figure out yourself, you feel like you owe it money because it's doing the job that you're paid to do. If you're charging people a shitload of money, you feel like you're... I can't imagine being a web developer, being a programmer and not using ChatGPT. I can't imagine. And if you are using it and you get all that free information that actually solves your problem in a faster way, do you charge more or do you stay at the same rate? Because after all, it's not like you got better. You just got better tools. I think the answer is, yeah, you should be able to charge more because it's the same as any profession. You charge by what you're able to do, not by... you pay what you're worth to other people. So if it's worth other people to pay it, yeah, charge it. So anyway, and also just because you have the tool doesn't mean you're good at using it. It takes skill to know how to get the right prompt. To get the right result, it takes skill. It takes nuance, and you got to explain it in a right way or else you will get dirty results like I talked about earlier. Anyway, it's just fascinating, man. You could do it all day. You could spend your whole day just talking to GPT, and it's making you, it's rewarding you in a way as if you were talking to somebody else almost, because it's just as good. Almost as good. All right, well, that's weird. So we're basically only getting more towards a dystopia. People can have less job availability, less reason to socialize, everything's automated and making money. It's helping with that. It's going to help people get rich. It's going to help people become poor faster because they won't have a job. But if people already have means to make money, they will be able to accelerate that process by streamlining their workflow. Their existing ways of making money will only become more efficient and prosperous and better, because you still need, I mean, you got to start with a method of making money. You gotta be, okay, I'm doing options trading, which I am. I'm still doing options trading. How long am I even recording, for frick's sake? Okay, so I'm almost, okay, we're good. Okay. Financial update. So I've been doing a little thing called options trade. I'm gonna take out this ponytail. Okay, so I'm an options trader. That's why I don't have a haircut. That's why my hair is getting long and I'm unshaven, is because, yay, don't really need, and this is a brag. This is a gloat. I don't need to be groomed because I don't live in a world that forces me to groom myself. Everything I do is by choice and happenstance. Yeah, I like having a little bit of a collar on my shirt, and that's why I'm wearing a collar on my shirt that does such a, that looks that way. It's by choice. And I keep using the monitor as a mirror, and that's not a sin, but I'm going to give myself a sin just for not like it, for yammering on about boring shit. So anyway, I don't remember what I was talking about. Oh, yeah, financial update. I can dress however the hell I want because who gives a crap? I don't have a job. I work for myself. And to be honest, I don't even think I look that bad. I just look like, I don't know, just unconventional. It's just not like what you would see in a office, you know, where there's customer service happening. You see it in an office, just not one that's like public. So I don't really give a crap about your judgment. I don't accept your judgment. I accept it, but I'm not going to change my ways. I accept your right and freedom to give me judgment, but I'm not going to care or listen or acknowledge it. But I appreciate it. So anyway, I've been option trading and selling options. I lost a lot last year on the zero DTEs, and I was only selling them. The problem is I got greedy, and the Adderall, as it wears off, your brain starts to crave dopamine. So you could have been having a great first part of the day, but then as you start to feel that crash, that midday slump of like, eh, who gives a fuck? Do I really give a fuck about money? I mean, just give me fucking dopamine. Give me a fucking punch of, give me something to jerk off to. And it ain't whatever's happening here on the screen. So that's when you start doing risky shit at the end of the day, and then you could lose way more than you made. You could give back like $10,000, $20,000 in a day and have only made $1,000 or $2,000 per day. It's way easier to lose $20,000 than it is to make $2,000. That's how I was doing it. I stopped doing it that way. Now I kind of actually want to stay wealthy. I don't actually want to lose wealth. So I'm trying to build wealth, and I'm doing the wheel, options wheel strategy still. It's going great. And crypto went up, and so I'm able to cash out some crypto into real money. Because when it's just in crypto land, it's not money. It's just paper. It's just like, okay, it's worth this much. But does that mean it's going to actually enter your bank account? No. It hopefully it does. But let's say you actually had $1,000,000 in crypto. Okay. And you don't want it in crypto. You actually want it in money. Because you don't have $1,000,000 in money. You have, let's say, 50, you know, enough money to live off, but you don't have $1,000,000. It's all tied up in crypto. So you consider yourself a crypto millionaire, but not a real dollar millionaire because you don't have it in dollars. And you can't call yourself a millionaire until it's in dollars because good luck turning crypto into dollars if it's a huge amount of crypto. Let's say you have $1,000,000 crypto. Let's continue to say that you have that because we're still in the same scenario that I'm talking about. And you say, you know what, I want in dollars. So you sell it all in one big fell swoop. You have it on an exchange. Why? Why do you have $1,000,000 just sitting on an exchange? That was stupid. So before you can sell $1,000,000 worth of crypto, you got to first transfer it to an exchange. So that takes some trust involved. You got to trust that the exchange is going to be like, oh, it's some guy. This guy just decided, oh, he sent $1,000,000. Okay, yeah, sure, here you go. We'll just credit it to your account and then let you just withdraw it as U.S. dollars without asking any questions. Yeah, we do the KYC. We know your date of birth. We know your SS. You know, we know that you're probably the person that you say you are, but who the hell knows where that $1,000,000 came from? So you got to hope and pray that the exchange just lets it slide, that some guy is just depositing from where, who knows where, not from a bank account, from some random wallet. Okay, so let's say that goes through. Now you got $1,000,000 worth of crypto sitting on an exchange. You're still not a millionaire. It's worth $1,000,000. To some people, maybe, not to me. I wouldn't pay $1,000,000 for that version of $1,000,000 because it's not a U.S. dollar. It's crypto. So let's say you sell it all. Okay, boom. You sell it all in one big fell swoop, one transaction. You pay a huge fee. So you're left with, I don't know, $999. We'll just say that. So you got $999. It's close enough. You're still pretty much a millionaire in the nominal value of a dollar. So you got that much in your exchange account, in your Coinbase account. Now you're almost there. Now you got to withdraw it to your bank account. Let's hope that your bank is okay with you just taking $1,000,000 out of Coinbase without them having any idea where the hell that came from. Good luck. If that happens, if it goes through and it clears and settles, now you got $1,000,000 to your name. Congratulations. You're now a millionaire. You got to pay taxes. Unless you paid all of that in your own money that you already, if your initial investment was also $1,000,000, which I probably doubt, I highly doubt it. Then you got to pay taxes on the gains, and hopefully they're long-term, and then it'll be 20% for most of it. If it's a short-term gain, you got to pay like 20 to 30 to 40% or whatever. A ton, you got to pay a lot. So you're not going to be a millionaire, even if all is said and done. If you're a crypto millionaire, you're not a millionaire. You're close. You're about halfway there. So why did I start talking about this? Because I'm trying to turn my crypto assets into real assets. Bitcoin, not so much. I'm keeping my Bitcoin, but I'm just turning it into real money, the other stuff, the Doge and all that. Because Dogecoin is not a money-making asset. It just sits there. It's just, okay, I hope that somebody dumber than me buys it for a higher price. That's all this. And I'm done sitting and waiting for some dumber person. There's already been plenty of dumb people, so I've been selling it to them. And now they're stuck with it. And now I have these dollars that actually can be used to invest in stocks. Stocks, they actually are like real assets. Like, they're linked to an actual company that you own that actually probably provides a service or product. Dogecoin does not do anything of such. So, I'd rather have stocks. And it's just more secure to have your money in something that's actually like kind of like backed by the SIPC, you know, FDIC. Cash is king right now in this phase of the market. Right now, you want to be piling up a huge pile of cash, because right now the market is doing funny, stupid things. And eventually it will become rational again, like reality will come back as it always does, and we will go down. And then you'll have cash to buy stocks for when it goes up again, and you'll be like, where did all this money come from? I just doubled my money by doing something. It's pretty simple. I bought low and I sold high. Oh, you just keep doing that over the next few decades. Pile up cash as the stocks are being irrationally expensive. Buy as they're being irrationally cheap. Eventually, you will be doubling your money every 5 years or so. If not, that's like conservative. You'll probably be doubling your money every 3 to 5 years if done very prudently with a high percentage of your net worth. You have to be pretty aggressive. You have to do this with your pretty much your whole net worth. Can't just do it with 10%. So you got to be selling, buying, and selling like most of your positions every market cycle. If you do that, you'll be also paying a shitload in taxes, as is unavoidable. This is how you build quick wealth. It's easy to not pay taxes if you have 50 to 100 years, because it's just capital gains that you never have to cash out, just unrealized until the very end of your life. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about becoming rich a little quicker than natural retirement timeline. So that's how you do it. I don't know if I actually explained anything, but that's how you do it. Let's just pretend I did. So I'm building up my cash position to where I have enough cash to live off. First of all, for at least 2 to 3 years, I have a safety net. So I could do this podcast without making a single penny for the next 2 to 3 years, and I won't have to change it. I could continue doing this without changing my lifestyle one bit. I could even upgrade it a little bit. I could even make some upgrades to my lifestyle and not make a single penny for the next 2 years. And you can see, I could do this every week without stressing my balls. Unless something goes wrong, unless there's an emergency or something. I'm on track to have enough of a fund, emergency fund, to last me that long. Living expenses. I can't afford an emergency. An emergency could wipe out those years that I'm talking about. You know, that's why I have to be careful. There's no surplus. Everything is accounted for. I don't have any surplus wealth to play with. You know? So, in addition to the money that I am living off that I sold to get the cash, this cash pile will be allocated to investing into legitimate things, as well as crypto, when the market crashes. When there's a market correction, of course, I will buy crypto slowly. Dollar cost average as it goes down and down, just like I did 2 years ago, and look what it did. That went up. The only problem is I didn't have that much to invest, so I learned, like, frick, I wish I had a lot more cash to invest into Solana, because it's not like I wouldn't have done that. It's not like I didn't know to buy Solana. I just only had so much cash lying around because I had to live off it. I needed money to buy water that's brown, you know, copper-colored water for some reason, pink water. I needed money for that. So I couldn't buy 10 to 20, I couldn't just throw like $20,000 into Solana, as much as that would have been the right thing to do, because it was already allocated towards something a lot more important and less risky. That's a risky thing to do. So you have to compartmentalize your wealth. Don't ever just dedicate your entire net worth to one vehicle, to one investment vehicle, one bucket, one business, one stock, one anything, one position, in like one strategy. It shouldn't all just be in one asset, like all gold, all cash. No, it shouldn't all be all anything. You should be distributed based on your net worth and your risk tolerance and your age, your lifestyle, your income. That's when you can decide, okay, 10% will be in cash, 50% will be in stocks, I don't know, the rest will be in real estate, I don't know, whatever, depends on who you are. I like stocks because they can be traded instantly just by clicking a mouse. That's why I like stocks, because they're more liquid. But that's the key word, is liquidity. It has to be spread around like a totem pole. There should be a hierarchy of how you allocate your risk and liquidity. You should have most of your wealth, if you're smart, dedicated towards the less risk, the low risk, low liquidity things. I guess liquidity is not as important. As long as you have the temperament where you're not going to sell it all, it doesn't really matter how liquid it is. Like if it's a stock, it shouldn't be one stock. First of all, let's address that. Unless you're a CEO of a company, you shouldn't have all your money in one stock. If you're a higher up at the company, that's another exception. But if you're just a regular person, you shouldn't have all your money in one stock. But it's okay to have 50%. It's okay to have most of your money in stocks, plural, as long as it's a diversified group of stocks that is managed by somebody who knows how to pick them, such as an index fund. But you shouldn't have it all in a high-risk basket of stocks or strategy or anything. You should not. Because with enough time, money goes up. Wealth goes up over time if it's invested in a broad index fund. So there's no reason for it to be put in a more risky place or allocation, because you are getting rich over time by a decent return every year without taking risk. So you might as well, so there's no reason to take that risk. No reason to take extra risk when you're already making good money just by throwing it into the stock market. So that's where probably most of your money should be, or most of your wealth should be, not money, your wealth that you don't need to live off. Your retirement should be in that type of assets. Next, you could put it into something a little more risky or volatile, like, you know, small cap fund or mid cap fund or tech stocks, you know, different tech stocks that you're going to watch very closely, or crypto as we get a little bit more, you know, now we're getting into the super high risk, super high volatility crypto. Yeah, sure, you could buy crypto, but as long as you keep it constrained to no more than what you're willing to lose. So don't put more than 10%, 5 to 10% of your portfolio in that shit. I mean, it all depends on who you are and what your risk net worth is and everything like that. If your net worth is only like 100K, sorry to say that that's not a lot, but it is a decent amount. Depending on, I mean, for my age, I would be happy actually if it was 100K. Anyway, I'm gratuitous that it's a little higher than that, but that doesn't mean I would be happy, to be honest, if it was only 100K, because that's still pretty freaking good for my age. It's good to even have anything more than zero. So I'm not trying to shit on you if you think that's a lot, because it is a lot. So, but let's say you have 100K and you want to grow your net worth in a way that's not super risky, and you don't want to be like, okay, yeah, I had 100K. Now, 6 months later, I have 50K because I put it all in a crypto. Yeah, don't do that. If you have 100K, I wouldn't even put more than like 2%. So $2,000 into crypto, five if you're crazy. If you're feeling crazy, yeah, put 5%, but that's the upper threshold, the maximum threshold, because that's 5% of your net worth, and we're talking about 100K. Rent is always going to be at least 1,000, right? On average for one, it's always going to be a minimum, just rent, $1,000. So when we're talking about your, 5% of your net worth, we're talking about a huge amount of money in terms of like time forward. Like, that's all going to evaporate within the next few years. That's why you don't really want to do anything stupid with it, right? But if you have 100K net worth, yeah, put some of it in investments. Something, a lot of it should be in cash. Probably 40 to 50 in cash, 50%. 50,000? Is that too much? Okay, maybe not. Doesn't have to be 50,000 in cash. That's stupid. You don't need that much of an emergency fund. Maybe 10,000. Yeah, okay, 10,000 in cash. That's enough to get by. It's enough of a bubble. It's enough of a safety net to pay a few months' rent. So anyway, the rest should be, some on the sidelines in cash. Maybe 15K in cash. 5 to 10K in your bank account that you actually use to live off. 5 to 10K, if possible, whatever's possible, in your investment account for when there is an opportunity to invest, you have some cash. You always want some cash in your investment account. So if there isn't you always need some cash. You can't just be fully invested, because what if the stock market crashes? You'll have no money to invest and take advantage of that sweet opportunity. I don't know, man. I'm looking at it as somebody who's worth a little more than that. So you have a little more decisions, a little more room for how to allocate your net worth. And after a certain point, all it comes down to is how you're allocating your net worth. It doesn't really make a difference. I don't know. After you reach a certain net worth, managing that net worth becomes more important than maintaining the income, I think, to support it, because eventually that income will go away, but the net worth will be a huge pile that is like overwhelming, so it's like bigger than any income. Eventually your income will become small in proportion to the net worth. That's just how it works. Unless you just keep making more and more money exponentially, I don't think that's not how it works. Your net worth eventually dwarfs your income, regardless of what it is, regardless of your income, even if you make $1 billion a year, because that will slowly grow to more than $1 billion a year, and that'll, what I mean is your net worth will slowly balloon beyond $1 billion a year, which doesn't make sense. What I mean is a billion will be so small compared to your net worth that I won't even really feel like you're making much. Whatever, man. I'm just talking about percentages here. So it matters more where you allocate your assets than it does how much money you're making. Even if you're a billionaire, it scales up regardless of your income, your net worth. Managing your assets play a bigger role. They have a bigger effect on your future wealth potential than your income. Get it? I don't know. I don't know. Who the hell knows? Because if you have like $10 million in the bank and you're making $1 million a year, so you have $10 million in the bank. Okay, what's that doing for you? Not much. It's not paying much interest because banks don't pay much, unless it's a high yield savings account. Okay, so you're getting 5%. Okay, so you're getting $50K in dividends, whatever you call it, in interest. Okay, but you also get $1 million a year. So your income is going to feel way more important than that little $50K a year. I mean, sure, $10 million is a lot more than 10. That's 10 years of your income. So, okay, 10 years of income is a lot. To have that saved up is a lot. So you're going to want to do something with it besides just have it sitting in the bank. Because it could make 10% just sitting in the stock market. That's $100K, and that goes up, that gets compounded. And eventually, if it compounds, it's going to be, $50 million. And if you still are making $100 million a year, that's not going to seem like much, because you already have 50 times that saved up. So you got to care more about how you allocate the return. You want to maximize the return on investment at that point, because the return on investment from your money is going to be bigger than any income you get from working. Okay, so that's boring for people that aren't me. Because for me, it's exciting because I'm slowly building my net. I'm finally getting to the point. I've reached a point where I have enough in cash where I can, solely from my investing activities, make more than my salary. I think just by doing the options wheel strategy, I think I can make more than my salary, which is $40K. I think I could make more than $40K by selling options through the rest of the year. I'm already halfway there, kind of, almost. So that's pretty cool. And if I could start making more and more every year, there's no limit. It's the same strategy that you could apply to a pretty big portfolio. You could just, so the percentage stays the same, the return stays the same percentage-wise, but the dollar amount is only going to grow because the more capital you have, the more money you could make, the more contracts you could sell. It's the exact same trades, just bigger trade, just more contracts per trade, but the exact same strategy. Get it? So you're doing nothing differently, you're just trading more contracts per trade. So the same amount of mouse clicks, just different keystrokes. You're just putting in a bigger number you're just putting in 9 instead of 1 or whatever. You might have to put an extra few extra zeros, so it is a slightly bit more work. And you have to hope that the liquidity is in, obviously there has to be a market for that many contracts depending on the stock, blah, blah, blah. So the more capital you have, the more you could trade, and also you could trade bigger companies that have bigger shares, that have more expensive shares. Okay, so it's really cool. That's a really interesting thing. It's really fun that you could just, that I'm at the precipice of being able to live off of stocks. I don't know, not there yet, but I have enough wiggle room where I'm very privileged to be in this position, because even if I don't make money from it, I still have enough of a nest egg where I don't have to worry about my income for the next 2 years. So you're going to be seeing a lot more of me. You're going to be seeing a lot more of me also other places, not just here. I'm talking to people that are not even listening to this. I'm talking to people out there that are not here with us. I'm telling you, hey, people in the world, I don't have to be inside anymore. You're going to be seeing a lot more Timmy Gustos. I got shit on my belly. I got I got pants on my belly that give me superpowers. Well, okay, it's been a pretty good episode, and, you know, I think I'm going to wrap it up here. I really wish I could be doing comedy, but I can't because I'm not funny. It's not that I'm not funny. Like, I think I still have it in me, but I don't know how. I don't know how to be funny. It's not that I completely lost it, I don't think, but I'm not funny. I don't know how to be funny. And I think it's still in there. I just got to figure out how to get it out of me without booze. Because I still... Oh, I looked at the camera. We're at 70 things I did wrong. So anyway, I wish I could go back to just being like, yes, I know how to be funny. I even kind of knew how to kill on command, like whenever I kind of wanted. I kind of felt like I had that ability. Like, yeah, I could kill if I want, I guess. I don't know, whatever. I'll figure it out. I kind of felt like I could do that almost whenever I want. And now I have no idea, dude. I have no idea how to even do okay at stand-up. I just forgot. I forgot how to do it. So, and that's because I don't drink anymore. When I was drinking, it's easy. It's just that without booze, I don't even know how to laugh. It's I don't even know how to like find other stuff funny, let alone stuff that I create myself. You know, like I think I'm still capable of creating funniness, but if I don't find things funny to begin with, whether I'm the one making it or not, it doesn't really matter. So my sense of humor is severely injured still. Since I quit drinking, so it's over 2 years, it's been severely injured. But I miss it, because now that I have less stress financially, you kind of need that to do comedy. You kind of need to be rich. Fuck. To be funny, because then you're going to be too stressed to... No, you need to be around people too. I'm also too isolated. You need to be non... You can't be super isolated the way I am and be fun. It's just not happening. My personality just isn't designed to create comedy right now, man. So anyway, but you need to be rich to be doing comedy, because I used to be able to do that because I had no job and whatever, blah blah blah. Fuck, I hate spilling stuff. Okay, this has been episode 95 of the Tim Ferriss Bob Show. Have a good rest of the week. What the hell was that? What the f-